question.
This is Commissioner Landstrom. I don't know if you would have this information or not, but are you familiar at all with states who have no regulation of bone marrow transplant, and do they find that there are excess number of programs that crop up with low volumes?
Well, that is what happens. In those sort of states, you have a lot of low-volume programs. And almost every study has shown that volume does correlate with quality of outcomes. I disagree a bit with what the MDHC said about this. I think a number of studies have showed that volumes correlate with outcomes. And it's not so much the number of transplants you do, but it's really a surrogate marker for the experience of the transplant center, the experience of the physicians taking care of patients, the supportive care services you have for those patients, and all the things that go into making for good outcomes. So really, volumes is a surrogate marker for all the other good things you need to develop a great transplant center.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you, Doctor. Next on BMT, Gregory Yannick from University of Michigan. If I mispronounced the name, I apologize.
Thank you, Mr. Fallahy, and thank you to the commission for allowing me to talk. My name is Greg Yannick. I'm a professor in internal medicine and pediatrics at the University of Michigan, a member of the Blood and Bone Marrow Transplant Program. The University of Michigan, like Carmano, supports the issues that Dr. Uberti just stated, that transplant centers or the transplant issues should not be deregulated within the state. And just for time, I won't go over, I'm just going to paraphrase several issues. As Dr. Uberti said, there is excess capacity. At our current center, we have a 32-bed unit. Over the past 6 months, we've been running at 75% capacity. In 2011, we averaged 21 patients as our capacity out of 32. In 2010, we averaged 22 patients out of 32-bed unit. The big issue that hasn't been brought up yet, though, is manpower. There's currently 1,115 bone marrow transplant physicians in the United States, 929 adult physicians, the remainder pediatric physicians. The median age of these transplant physicians is now over 50 years in age. In a recent report from the ASBMT, the American Society of Bone Marrow Transplantation, the majority of these physicians are expected to retire by 2025. There are very few bone marrow transplant training programs out there. At this point in time, only about 30 new bone marrow transplant physicians are being trained in the U.S. Many of these physicians that are being trained are not even staying in the U.S. They're leaving to go to other countries and export that technology import that technology to their countries. So thus, manpower is going to be a critical issue in the coming decade. It's not only for physicians, but it's also for trained nursing personnel and trained physician extender personnel. In fact, there's no program specifically designed for training such personnel. Dr. Uberti brought up the association between high-volume centers and the quality of outcomes. And as he said, outcomes have historically been shown to be higher in high-volume centers. And I think the reason you have to look at it is simply this, is that high-volume centers have 24/7, 365-day coverage with transplant-trained personnel. When you're dealing with low-volume centers, transplant care is often diluted or deferred with cross-coverage by non-transplant physicians. And many of the low-volume centers that I know will typically have one or two transplant-trained physicians. They can't be there 24/7. They're there Monday to Friday. They may take vacations. They may go on conference. When you're dealing with non-transplant-trained physicians who are cross-covering, that's when your outcomes start dropping. That's when the quality of care starts dropping. At our center, we provide 24/7, 365 coverage. If we start, if we allow further programs within the state, given the manpower shortage, they'll just be diluting our current transplant personnel at our center, at other transplant centers, and diluting this coverage totally. And you say, well, why should that matter? Because when you aren't transplant trained, the errors you make are errors of omission instead of errors of commission, okay? Meaning that physicians that are cross-covering transplant units typically are too afraid to make a decision, and thus care is often delayed. And that's what we'll be faced with in this state if we start opening up to other centers in diluting this already short manpower pool. I just want to end with one section that Dr. Uberti touched on, too, and it's autologous transplants and the potential to deregulate autologous transplants. Nationwide, the mortality rate, the day 100 mortality rate for autologous transplants is approximately 5%. Think about that. How simple a procedure is an autologous transplant when it has a 5% mortality rate associated with it? I just returned last night from Minneapolis where the Children's Oncology Group met to review autologous transplantation protocols for pediatric patients. One of the protocols we looked at had nearly a 14% mortality rate. And this is in kids. These are not 60, 70-year-olds. These are in children that supposedly can tolerate these regimen even better than adults. If centers are allowed to do autologous transplantation, then they better have the trained personnel to handle things like severe hepatic veno-occlusive disease, using such agents as defibrotide, knowing how to handle things like ARDS post-transplant, acute renal failure. We just had a child had a CNS hemorrhage following an autologous transplant.
Can you sum up?
And so just in summary, in terms of issues that you should be aware of, one, there's an extreme manpower shortage in this state, which will be further diluted with the opening of further programs. And two, autologous transplants are not simple procedures associated with a fairly high mortality rate. And should that be under deregulation?
Thank you. Questions? Commissioner Klott.
Yes, Commissioner Klott. I have two questions. You made several points with regard to support staff. I don't know if this is a question you can answer, but what is an average ratio of support staff to physician in a BMT program?
You know, the support staff is actually pretty extensive, Commissioner Klott. We actually have nursing staff, so you've got nursing staff for a 32-bed unit. You've got approximately 50 nurses there. You can think of the yearly salary cost for 50 nurses. We have transplant-trained physical therapists. We have transplant-trained pharmacists. We have transplant-trained NPAs. The entire ancillary staff for our program is well over 100 people. And you're looking at the salary support for that. So as you look at costs for building a transplant program, think of the costs for salary support for supporting roughly 100 people salaries yearly.
Okay. So in that.
So in that center, it's about 10-1. So if you look at, we have about 100 ancillary personnel and approximately 10 physicians, so 10-1.
Okay. And then the second part of the question is, you touched on the training model or perhaps lack thereof formally for that support staff. Can you just describe how the support staff does get trained in today's application in a BMT center?
Sure. At our center, our nurses specifically will go through a rigorous 6-month training period where they're actually given didactic lectures both by nursing staff, physician staff, pharmacy staff. Over that 6-month period, they will be working closely with our nurses one-on-one with patient care. After 6 months, they're required to take a test to show proficiency. So they won't even be allowed to do patient care until after they pass this proficiency test.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. I think we have point counterpoint here. I have another card from Patrick O'Donovan who wants to challenge some of the statements made by Dr. Uberti. I will allow that. But I'm going to give you 2 minutes, Patrick, and then I might give rebuttal time to Dr. Uberti as well. Okay? So you got 2 minutes. Give it your best shot.
Thank you. I won't need the full 2 minutes at all. I'm just clarifying one point. Dr. Uberti was asked by Dr. Colling about the numbers of the volume per program in states with and without CON. That is some of the data that we brought to the SAC. And in the state of Michigan, at that time, it was about 110 BMTs per program. States with BMT CON regulations did about 100 BMTs per program. States without BMT CON regulation did about 128. So it's just opposite of what
Dr. Uberti represented to the commission. So I just want to make that point.
Okay. Thank you. Next.
One correction. It wasn't Dr. Cowlin. It was Commissioner Landstrom.
Make sure you get to the microphone first. Thank you.
Minor point. It wasn't.
I think what I was asked is, is there a proliferation of small programs? There's clearly a proliferation of smaller programs in centers that don't have a CON. I think you're talking about an average number. So the average number is not going to change because you still have big programs, but what you do have is a lot of small programs. In Michigan, you have a small number of big programs. In those centers, you have a great number of programs, half of which are big, half of which are small. So we're saying pretty much the same thing. We're putting the same emphasis, with different emphasis. In the programs that don't have a CON, they have a proliferation of a bunch of small programs, but they do have a bunch of big programs. So the average per program is the same. It's just that far more do small number of transplants. A big number do big number of transplants.
Thank you. I don't have any more cards, the point, counterpoint, or anything. So that concludes the public comment. Moving into commission discussion. Brenda, did you have any comments you wanted to make at this point or not?
This is Brenda. No.
Okay. All right. Discussion.
I'd like to recuse myself.
Okay. Dr. Sandler is going to recuse himself.
This should go much faster.
This is Commissioner Kashishian, and you know, when I think about this, as I look in my crystal ball, if we were to deregulate transplants, I think there would at least be another four hospitals or healthcare systems that would implement bone marrow transplant units. As I think about this, if the cost is $1 million or $8 million to set one up, or if how much personnel that system needs in order to do it, the important thing in my eyes is we have an affordability issue in this country regarding healthcare, and to add more infrastructure that's not necessary, in my eyes, is a tax onto somebody. It's a tax onto the employers, onto the citizens of the state, onto Medicaid because they have to pay to the state because they have to pay Medicaid rates. It's just, and I don't see a need for more units in this state. Again, every day I have members coming and saying that they can't afford their medications, and somebody's going to be paying for these additional units. It doesn't take money out of the system. It costs more money at the end of the day. And a need hasn't been demonstrated to me that we should deregulate this. You know, we're told that many other states do not have regulations for bone marrow transplant. My concern is some of those states, my customers are telling me that the cost of health care is much more expensive in those states than in the state of Michigan. So that if we want to attract employers into this state, we should limit the infrastructure within the healthcare system unless there's a demonstrated need for new technology or an expansion.
Thank you. Other comments from the commission? That was Commissioner Hughes making that
thank
comment.
You.
I hope you're not going to cut his premium.
This is Commissioner McCurdy. I'll have to recuse myself.
Okay, thank you. Other comments from the commissioners?
This is Commissioner Landstrom. I think the points about larger programs and quality and the workforce issues are really compelling as well.
Other comments? I would echo the comments made by Dr. Kashishian and Gay Landstrom because I too agree with the comments that we heard, and from what I've looked at, I agree with that. Any other comments from the commission? Okay. I think what potential option here is a motion to, I'll phrase this inartfully, not deregulate BMT. Or to regulate BMT, either way, one or the other, to continue regulation. Does anyone want to make a motion to either effect?
Is This is Commissioner Landstrom. I will make a motion that we continue to regulate bone marrow transplant programs.
So the motion on the floor is to continue the regulation of BMT programs. Any question from those commissioners that have not recused themselves?
Ms. Commissioner Pott, I have a question. So beyond the initial motion, if we would approve that, are we looking at reviewing the standards potentially? Is that going to be another part of our discussion this morning?
Brenda, that could be a follow-up motion. Again, if there's issues that you do want to look at in those standards, at a minimum, the department would just request that there be a motion to allow us to do the technical updates that we've been doing with the other standards.
Sure. Okay, thank you.
So let's get to that potential issue after we take a vote on the motion that's in front of us right now. Any other questions about the current motion? All those in favor of the motion to continue regulation of BMT, please raise your hand. By my count, the motion carries, and we have two abstentions, Dr. Sandler and McCurgy. Having Brenda, that motion having passed, let me ask you a question then, and Brian, I'm going to try to anticipate what you were going to ask. Would you recommend technical changes only, or do you see a need for more than that as you look at the standards?
This is Brenda. At this time, we would just, like I say, at a minimum, request the technical changes, unless the commission feels strongly about some other areas.
Do any commissioners feel strongly about any other edits besides the technical changes?
I just have a question.
Sure, go ahead.
You would anticipate bringing back recommendations for technical changes at the June meeting, correct? Okay, that's all.
This is Commissioner Kishishi, and I agree with Brenda. I mean, these standards were reviewed a year and a half ago and put in at that point. To redo the work again in a year and a half, if there's some major changes within the next year and a half, we might have to take up BMT standards, 2 years or something of that sort. But given that we just reviewed them, just implemented some new standards about a year ago, November, or I'm not quite sure when it was, but whenever it was, I would recommend we just look at technical changes and not have a SAC.
Brenda, assuming we go along with the idea of technical changes, do you need a motion to enable you to do that?
This is Brenda. It would help. It just clarify things. Okay. So it would just be a motion to allow the department to make the technical edits consistent with the other CON review standards and to bring back at a future meeting date.
Would anyone like to make that motion?
Commissioner Clyde, I'll make a motion that the commission take up them or approve that the department review the standards for technical changes only.
And then bring it back to the commission at the June meeting.
At the appropriate time, which would be the next meeting, yes.
Support for that motion?
Commissioner Kishishian, support.
Great. Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, raise your hand. Motion carries. All right. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is the hospital bed standards and